Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Wednesday, February 4th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Thanks for joining me today. Apologize for the no coffee the last couple of days. Obviously, it's been busy with a lot of Gamecock sports news. Some of it's okay, some of it's not so good, but had a couple of doctor's appointments I had to make first thing in the morning, and it just zaps the time to record this. And with so much going on, you know, you could pre-record it, but then you're probably going to have something that changes. And I don't know. We had two good episodes of the show, so we're good. A couple of newsletters again. If you want to get in the newsletter, insidethegamecocks.com, you get a little taste, about 5% of the site that we're going to launch in the near future. Written content, it's totally free. Good stuff in it. Comes out daily. Sometimes we'll have specials like twice a day. Like Jamie Bradford as a baseball insider, that will be kind of an idea of the baseball insider coverage you'll get on the site coming up. He's going to be a part of it. So really good stuff. We've gotten good feedback on it so far. Many of you have signed up. So continue to sign up for that. Absolutely free. Like I said, just cost you to put in your email address, get to read about the Gamecocks, consume everything as bad as it is at times. Yesterday's results, the Gamecock baseball team beat USC Upstate 12-3, pulled away late. Kind of some iffy moments at the plate in the middle, but they came through. Patrick Evans, boy, he had a great night, two home runs. He's a really good player. You know, I don't think JB would mind me sharing this with you. Bradford got to watch batting practice. He may have said it on the morning show. And it didn't turn out this way in the game, because obviously nobody really hit all that well in the game. But Evans had a – he watched him take batting practice and was like, wow, this guy's really good. I think he is too. Patrick Evans, really, really good player. Played leadoff. Will Craddock was out with an illness, according to Paul Maneri. He did have – he took a pitch on the hand. They were worried – he was worried it was broken, but it's not. He should be fine, but he's sick. So he didn't even show up to the ballpark last night. But that's – that's why the top of the order was changed. And then Maneri subbed Jameson in for Bach. I guess Bach missed a sign, but, anyway, the Gamecocks won 12-3, pulled away from Upstate. Really pretty impressive win. Upstate's not as good as they were last year, obviously, at 7-7. Tonight, the Gamecocks play Charleston Southern, and I'm going to tell you, this is a very losable game. Just looking at the results, Charleston Southern is 10-1. They got wins over North Florida. I don't know what kind of team the Ospreys have this year. I just know that in sports in general, North Florida gives Carolina problems. They swept Elon. They lost to UNC Wilmington, was their only loss by one, 10-11, 11 innings. And swept Brown, the Brown University Ivy League team, excuse me, over the weekend. So they're good. They've been playing winning baseball this year. Certainly, you know, it's hard to sit there and dig in. Is Bucknell better than Northern Kentucky? All that good stuff. So it'd be Bucknell, North Florida, Elon, lost to UNC Wilmington, swept Brown. But yeah, this is a team that knows how to win, and we know that you can lose these games. And Paul Maneri certainly was interested in getting the focus on Charleston Southern tomorrow because they're, like I said, playing pretty good baseball right now. Pretty good baseball are the Buccaneers out of Charleston. So that game starts at 6:30 tonight. SEC Network plus Gamecock Network on the radio call. Gamecock men's basketball. Felt bad for Meechie Johnson. You know, even with everything going on, with the losing, and it is just bottomed out, you know, obviously, let's just call it like it is. Lots of talk about Lamont Paris this week, the different opinions that, you know, different things that you've picked up here and there, kind of arrive at a decision hasn't been made. But to me, you're going to hear that a lot. No decision, no decision, no decision. What I will say, because I kind of don't like to say things the same way other people says them. God, late JC. Other people will say them. Yeah, I try to talk a little different sometimes. So I'll just say it is up in the air whether or not he returns next year. Don't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised either in either direction. I think this is something they're going to have to work through. I think that, like I pointed out yesterday on the show, it just depends on, you got to weigh the pros and cons, put one on one side, one on the other, and then it's a gamble either way, obviously. But it's a new athletic director, but institutionally, it's more of a gamble. I mean, it's less of a gamble now than I think when they fired Frank Martin, because you were sitting on a team that potentially added some players coming back and players coming in. Jermaine Cousinard was on that team. Eric Stevenson was on that team. They were getting GG Jackson regardless. Frank Martin was. And the idea with that was, okay, well, it's not going to get any better. And it's just time for a change all the way around. So they fired him. And that was fine. I think I pointed out at the time, maybe it's time to go. I don't think he was particularly happy. The administration certainly wasn't happy, but it's kind of blown up after one good year. I mean, this is not Frank Martin after his first 2 years, which they did not have a good roster but played competitive basketball. I mean, his second year he lost 20 games, but went 2-1 in the SEC tournament, pulled some upsets. I mean, not getting back to the tournament after the Final Four certainly was disappointing, but this is probably more. And if you looked at the pictures on social media of the crowds at the baseball and basketball game last night, many of you have checked out. That many of you that attend games have checked out. I think people are still paying attention, but boy, it's tough. Got some feedback yesterday about some feedback from some fans and stuff, and they're just. I don't know if people even notice it in this social media world, because I think if you're in leadership, you'd probably do yourself a favor by looking beyond what's on X, because the folks on X that care enough to comment are very few. It just seems large, because if you have 100 people complaining, you're like, well, they're still engaged, but of those 100, there's thousands that maybe just checked in. It's like, well, if you're not going to try, I'm not going to try. And that's kind of what I think sometimes the fan base feels like, when there's not action, be it a coaching change, be it a public commitment to reinvestment and realignment, whatever. I have my ideas on what needs to happen with baseball and basketball, but we'll wait and see how it plays out. If I sit here and give my opinion and then another decision is made right now, I'll give my opinion closer to the time. I just don't want to. I think that you can make a intellectually sound argument either way with basketball, and it makes sense. The numbers are definitely not on the side of retaining Malamut Paris. The it's now 39 of 47 losses against power conference opponents, 32 of 37 last SEC games since they walked off the court and against Arkansas in 2024. I was at that game at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, and I just use that as a point of reference, because after that was kind of the same time they got I don't think it's correlated. It would be really dumb of me to sit here and say, well, it's correlated because I went to that game. It's just kind of a funny point of reference. And I don't think that the contract extension Lamont Paris was given during that time was a correlation either. I think Lamont Paris has worked extremely hard and given everything to it. When you have a guy in the rare instance that's kind of, I guess, playing out the string, oh, I got my contract, so I'm good. There's not a lot of effort that takes place, and you could it's noticeable. But I think Lamont Paris is coaching hard. I think he's very frustrated. I think he's very highly disappointed. Matt probably a little bit more down on himself than people will let on based on what I've been told. So I don't think it's correlated, but just to give you a time reference there, that's the number, because they went on to lose to Auburn by 41 or 31 in the tournament. And double digits to Oregon in the, speaking of Jermaine Cousinard in that game in the first round in Pittsburgh. So since that point, it's not been good. It's just not been good. And Ole Miss has struggled this year under Chris Beard, hasn't had the year they wanted to after going to, I think, the Elite Eight last season. And they're picking up steam, though. They beat Auburn. A lot of people beating Auburn down the stretch, but there, Ole Miss is playing better basketball. The season, regular season ends on Saturday at 1 o'clock out in Oxford. So you play Ole Miss again. So that's, or not again, but you play Ole Miss. So that's, they lose that one. Then 20 losses is guaranteed. And I pointed out yesterday on the show that that would be, but prior to Lamont Paris, this is the numbers again. I mean, I'm not, this is not an opinion. These are just what the numbers are. It is what it is. In the SEC era, 20 losses looks bad in college basketball. 20 wins may not be what it used to be because they play more games, but 20 losses still, it's not common. And South Carolina, 35 seasons in the SEC, had exactly three 20-loss teams, as bad as it's been at times. Fogler lost 21 in 99. I believe Frank Martin's second year, that team that won two SEC tournament games, they finished 14 and 20. And Darren Horn's last season before he got fired, 10 and 21. Lamont Paris has had an 11 and 21. Last year, a 12 and 20. They're 12 and 18 this year. So if you lose Ole Miss and the first round of the tournament, you're at 20. Even if you win, unless you beat Ole Miss, which could, that's, Ole Miss hadn't been a juggernaut at times. It's winnable. If you beat Ole Miss, you can avoid it. But if you lose, you're just kind of guaranteed. Unless you win the national championship, you'll have a 20-loss team. So we'll see. But felt bad for Meechie Johnson in some ways yesterday. Also, Meechie, though, you can't. Sometimes you just got to look at the bright spots, even though there's not many. That guy played his butt off for South Carolina. I know him leaving last year kind of put that team, which was much better than this year's team, by the way, in a bind, in a very tough league. But all's forgiven. He came back, played his butt off, and he's still out there trying. You look at it too, man. It's like, it's a shame because Meechie's like more consistent than he's ever been in his career. But the other guys just, I mean, like Mike Sharvajams. Sometimes he looks like an NBA player. Sometimes he just looks like he's out there floating around the court, can't get anything going. Same with Kobe Knox, same with Elijah Strong, drives me crazy. The bigs, EJ Walker's playing hard for a young, the freshmen are playing hard. I know Eli Ellis has been a disappointment. Somebody, I knew this would happen because there was some talk earlier this year. Mike Morgan talked to Rodney Terry, the former Texas coach, and he was singing Eli Ellis's praises. And obviously, the transition from overtime elite to, and that was the concern. I think I pointed it out, and everybody pointed it out. But that's been kind of a difficult transition for him to make. And I think with him and everybody else, though, Grant Polk, all these guys, the shots aren't falling. They're just not shooting well. Haven't all year. So he had a team designed to shoot, and they can't shoot. It's amazing. And they do, dudes, dudettes, every sport's kind of been that way. So I just need to shut. We just need to quit saying, all right, well, this should be a strength. Football was supposed to have a better offense and defense. You remember? That was the concern coming into the season. Can they stop people because of all the losses? Well, they did their job last year. The offense could not score. There are reasons for that. Hopefully it's getting fixed. Basketball is supposed to be able to shoot. They can't shoot. Baseball went out and got power bats, and now they're gonna. The pitching was the big concern. Well, pitching's been okay. They can't score runs. Now, there's different reasons for all of that. I can't put my finger on the basketball shooting thing. Maybe it's because the whole season. They've known they've had to hit it to win, and that they're pressing. I mean, they make some baffling decisions on the court too. Lamont Paris got into that on both ends of the court, but anyway, enough of all that. Latest on Lamont Paris is it could go either direction, and there's a case to be made for both. And whatever happens with the coach, I think there needs to be some soul searching on the part of leadership as far as how to align with that program and how to fix it. That's the thing. The records have not been good in these three major men's sports that a lot of people, the vast majority of the fan base cares about, and a lot. And the record's been horrible. And so what needs to be tweaked, changed, added, subtracted, flipped around the court, in basketball? What needs to happen to get this back to a level where they're winning games? And I don't think Gamecock fans have these delusions of grandeur. They get accused of it sometimes. We all do. As far as, well, they need to go to the Final Four again, or they need to, be in Omaha every year. Omaha's nice, don't get me wrong, and that should be the goal every year for the baseball program. Well, they need to get to the college football playoff. No, just people are going to be a little disjointed if you miss the college football playoff by one game like they did in 2024, because it's sad. But all in all, everybody's happy with that year. Just build on it and go. And I'm not saying everybody should sit around and hope for a bowl game in football next year either. I think they need a pretty big turnaround. But I think Gamecock fans understand the league they compete in and the teams they play. But for 33 years in basketball, 32 in football, they've competed in the league. And some people kind of talk about NIL and money. I just, I know what they're spending. I know what other schools are spending. Nobody's spending what Texas and Texas A&M are. I don't know. I mean, I read so the Athletic had an article about portal winners and losers. They pulled some GMs, and I would expect that Carolina was in the disappointing portal part. I would have expected them to spend what they needed to spend. Well, they did. Whether or not it works out, I don't know. Can you always use more? Yes. Is the basketball number again low? Yes. But, so that kind of draws in. So what do you need this to build, fix it, whether or not Lamont Paris is the coach? I don't know. I think it depends. Can you find players? I mean, that's the whole thing. And the problems are different in every sport. Anyway, I don't mean to start off with all that. We've talked about that all week on the show. It is the start of spring football practice. Just get it fixed. I mean, that's the message. Please just get it fixed. My friends are beside themselves because at this point, reality's kind of setting in. You've had three straight sports where, and baseball, I was talking to Bill Gunner yesterday on his show. He's like, well, there's still a chance. And that is the nature of baseball, I do think their chances are very slim with the approach at the plate that they take. David Cloninger had some excellent commentary and analysis on that. Go read it. He was on the morning show yesterday. I guess that's going to be on our YouTube page at some point. You can go listen to it. But, you look at it, and it's the problems are different for every sport. But if you're a fan and you're out there and you love the Gamecocks, it's like Groundhog Day. This spring practice starts this morning. Then the Gamecocks hit the field 9:30. Not called the Proving Grounds anymore. I don't know what they call the practice fields, the outdoor ones, but next to the Rice football building, or the, what is it, the Rice football complex, the Steve and Jerry Spurrier indoor. Anyway, the football compound out there, which I'm glad Carolina's got that, because for years when they were just out there on Bluff Road, that was awful. I mean, because practices were open then. I'd go during the Spurrier era, and you just sit out there, and people, like, they drive by My guess is either Clemson fans are idiots. They'd yell things. You had trucks. I don't know how they concentrated. It was one of the worst practice setups I've seen. Because at the time, I would go to Nike camps at various SEC schools and see where they practice. One of the worst I've ever seen. Probably the worst. Vanderbilt's at the time kind of was on a block in downtown Nashville, maybe a little worse. I couldn't believe that's where Carolina practiced, but they fixed that, right? And now it's like everybody else. So that's good. That's an asset. Progress, folks. Progress, right? Beautiful facility. So they hit the field at 9:30 this morning. The news yesterday, obviously, was Josiah Thompson out for the year. I've been kind of hitting around about that. I knew he's going to have surgery. I didn't know if it would be out for the year or not. So what this is he's got some, it's lower body. I'll just stick with the company line, knees most likely. And it's the type of surgery that you could play through it like he did last year. It's been going on a while. I was told about it at the end of 2024. But you wonder kind of sometimes strength with him, is how powerful can he get? He's got this nice frame that can hold probably 330 pounds and he doesn't even look big. That's one of the reasons he's a five star and he moves around well. Well, when you get bigger, that obviously affects your knees. It's science. And if you don't have good knees, and a lot of offensive linemen don't. It's hard to bend. It's hard to move. You have some pain that lingers, and it's hard to get bigger. And Beamer kind of laid that out in the press conference yesterday. So what's going to happen is, and I know it's a win now year, right? And I think you're probably starting to see why they're still like they've got tackles. They're going JUCO. They're trying to find tackles, although they've signed a bunch of offensive linemen. Especially with Jacarius Peake being sidelined, and Beamer had some positive things to say about him. I'm hopeful he can be back by the Mississippi State game. I think that's a positive outlook, but we'll see. They said he was in good spirits. So there's your left tackle, right? Josiah was probably not even in the plans now that I think about it, because they knew about the need to have this surgery when he came back from the portal. So they kind of recruited, and Beamer talked about this. If you kind of read between the lines, they recruited for him not to play in 2026. And I kind of guessed that based on what I've heard. And I'm not bragging and say, oh, I knew about this before everybody else. I'm just trying to explain why, when we've have conversations about Josiah Thompson, be it in a roundtable format on the morning show, or me and Phil, or somebody would ask me about it, I was always kind of paused a little bit. Want to explain my behavior, right? But they recruited for him not to be a part of the 2026 roster. So why'd they take him back? Well, I think this, and I know this, if you look at the number of guys on the offensive line they're losing after 2026, they literally just have one more year of eligibility. So barring like an injury this year where they fortunate enough to get another year, you're gonna have to hit the portal again. So you need all the guys you can get. So for 2027, Josiah has a red shirt year. He gets the surgery. He's healthy. He gets his body right to where it needs to be. He can come back and really be a big part of your 2027 offensive line. So it was smart to take him back. Plus, he's an in-state five-star, and it's never bad. So it'll be interesting to see who goes out there first. And again, as Shane Beamer pointed out, that's not the depth chart. But in practice today, we'll see what Randy Clements does. And with a new coach, you don't know. Maybe he doesn't do it that way. But the candidates, you've got the two kids from the state of Arizona, Seth Smith from Northern Arizona. Fifth, 6-year guy, Armando Nieves from New Mexico State, fifth, 6-year guy. They're both from Phoenix originally. Damola Ajitahun, the redshirt freshman. Like, look, Damola is talented. He's got a bright future. The thing is he's young. I mean, still, it's his second year. Usually by your third year, you're looking for that, but you got a new coach. You got Clements, you got Jason Smith out there that's assisting him. So a new couple of coaches. So, coach him up. There's been plenty of redshirt freshmen that have started on the offensive line of the SEC and not only started but thrived. And he's dropped some weight, and I'm gonna talk about that in a second. He's 6'6", 310 is what he's listed at, which kind of fits the left tackle mold, maybe right. Shedd Surratt, I believe, without knowing for sure, that he will stay at right tackle. But if he lines up at left guard today, not surprised with that either. But he's dropped some weight. He was almost 340 last year, down to about 325. And then Dane Arnett from Ferris State. You may say Ferris State. Good God. And I will admit it's different for offensive linemen because you're just facing a whole different level of speed at this level trying to block than you are at the D2 level. But at quarterback, Trinidad Chambliss came from Ferris State and he didn't have a problem adjusting, and that's hard too. I think it would be intellectual. I think I'm not going to use that talking point that, oh, look at Trinidad Chambliss. But I like Dane Arnett, Midwest offensive lineman, 6'4", 5'3", 302. Kind of a Cason Henry type of guy in that he's physical and likes to mix it up. And he was a guy when they recruited him who could play inside or outside. But I think now definitely you look at him on the outside. For real. So those five guys at tackle, and then they're going to look for a JUCO grad transfer. I thought it was interesting that Beamer mentioned Darius Gray coming in. When they signed him, I thought, well, here this may be the third straight year there's a true freshman starting. But he wanted to play. Wanted to go through his basketball season. And I think didn't graduate early. Five-star guy, number one guard in the country. Those types of guys sometimes come in and start even at places like Alabama. Certainly good enough talent-wise. Can he come in, adjust, all that good stuff? But Beamer mentioned him in the press conference yesterday. But you're like, well, wait a minute, he's not going to play tackle. He could. He could if he needed to. He's good enough. But what I think this does is, if you keep Surratt out, because it, like in a perfect world, let's just say Josiah Thompson was not injured, was ready to roll, moved to right tackle, Peak was healthy. I think Surratt's probably your left guard in that situation. But now, considering he was the starting right tackle for the last three games last year, and you need to have good tackles, I think he'll at least get a look and compete at it right tackle. And so what Gray's presence would do is if you're a little shaky on the inside, like, man, I really wish Surratt could have been in here. Gray could come in and be that solidifying player next preseason. Not predicting that, but that's what could happen. And that's why you recruit great players, obviously. So those are the options at tackle with Josiah out. It's certainly going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. I think South Carolina needs Seth Smith, Dane Arnett, and Damola Ajinihun to be good. Hopefully there's a great one, consistently good one in there. But I think they need those guys to be good and be able to go out there and compete and hopefully make a difference. Against SEC defensive linemen. This team has nine SEC games plus Clemson next year. The only breathers are the first two games, Kent and Towson. So you're going to need to be on point up front. Like I've said before, that's the kryptonite to this style of offense is just getting destroyed up front. Don't get destroyed. Experiment. Don't get destroyed now. Don't get destroyed. Just don't get destroyed. I thought that some of the nutrition and workout feedback that Beamer gave in the press conference yesterday was positive. Body fat to body muscle. Just looking at the listed numbers, you can tell that on the offensive line. I mentioned Surratt's leaner. Damola is leaner. The incoming guys' weights came a little lower than maybe they were at their previous school. Hank Purvis was 360, listed at 360 at Purdue, listed at 330 now. Looked it in the interviews with the media the other day. So I think that's a good thing. I thought the offensive line, on top of everything else, was probably a little too big, moved a little too slowish last year. And I think the idea behind that was probably to do the power run thing that they decided they were going to do. Big, beefy offensive line. We talked all summer about this offensive line is, you know, big. It's bigger. Bigger's not always better, and it wasn't, but they've leaned up. They've leaned up. And I think just on the basis of Kendall Briles wants to run a lot of tempo, you know, it's probably going to be a different looking offensive line with regards to leaner, meaner, more athletic, more of a premium on that kind of stuff. Although at Baylor, and if you look at the research, the 330-pound right guards are common. So, and it's really more about body fat percentage, how in shape you are, quickness, stuff like that, rather than weight. I'm just saying that there can be, as we've seen, too big out there. And I don't think anybody that's too big is going to get on the field, you know, reshape, all that good stuff, all those buzzwords you hear. But sounded like a pretty good winter workout. It always is. It always is. The more important thing with this, besides the actual physical gains, and Beamer mentioned it, that hey, you got to go play football. That stuff is fine, but you got to go do it on the field. He's right, and that's good to emphasize that. But the other part of it is just kind of the familiarity, getting guys comfortable. In today's day and age, when you have this much roster transition, so much of the battle with all this is getting guys acclimated, because you're not, whereas the teams in college football that meet high expectations almost always had, before the portal, a lot of returning players. Well, there's a reason for that. They're comfortable. They know what to do. They're not swimming mentally. They're competing, and that allows you to compete, play free and compete physically, that kind of thing. But now, you know, you gotta, it's in and out, in and out. It's almost on a yearly basis. So, I mean, Florida, Steve Spurrier said the other day that John Summerall has 50 something new players on Florida's roster. So Florida actually was bottom of the SEC with returning starters. South Carolina's top four. Georgia's number one. Now Georgia's got some things to be excited about next year with that. But yeah, Carolina's got enough returning starters and enough new guys. I don't buy the whole they had a disappointing portal thing, unless some of these guys don't pan out. But that's the case with every portal. I mean, on the surface, I didn't see where they got completely outbid or whatever. So we'll see. We'll see kind of how it plays out. But you got to acclimate those guys, and that's what's most important. And you know, Sellers and Briles obviously have hit it off, according to Beamer. I think that's important. But you know, Lenoris has gotten along with Dowell Loggins and Mike Shula pretty well too. I think that the key for Lenoris Sellers is going to be to get this down, and like I've said, get it second nature, especially the RPO part of it. And when you can run RPOs, as Indiana showed us last year, it's so helpful. And your quarterback has to make the right decision. It's decisions. Like, it's almost, there's some triple option type of stuff that like the old option, remember how lethal it was, because you got to kind of pick your poison. Or when the zone read got big, Pat White at West Virginia, Rich Rod, all that, and you couldn't stop it for a while. RPOs, because, and they've evolved into different types and stuff through the years, since it kind of came in vogue maybe about 10 years ago. It's very, if you can execute, like if your receivers can catch the ball and your quarterback can make the right read and your running backs can find the hole and your offensive line can block, just block a bit, you can, with decision-making, you can really rack up the yards. And if you do it really fast, it can be very difficult to stop. So I think that's very important for Lenore Sellers and Kendall Briles. He has to be happy about this, I think, because yeah, I think when you're trying to think too much and then you're struggling and it's not working, you never achieve that Use a Jerry Maguire term here, Quan. You never get to that peaceful level where everything's second nature and you're just going to play. I feel like in 2024, Lenore Sellers got there, running Dowell Loggins' offense. I feel like when he stepped on the field, starting with it kind of started in the Alabama game, and he had the turnovers and stuff. Started with that pass he threw to Mazio Bennett for the touchdown. I think something clicked there. And he played at a pretty doggone high level. Turnovers against Alabama notwithstanding for the rest of the season. Played free, kind of figured it all out. Then we got to the bowl and things looked a little different. Those of you that thought it was a sign of things to come, it certainly was. Although that was a game where I thought it was one of Mike Shula's best games, probably his best game. You know, Carolina went up and down the field against Illinois, they just couldn't score. So, but Lenoris did look a little different in that one. Did look a little different. Don't know if he was coached differently, but I can't honestly sit here and defend how he was coached after watching the next nine games, right? So I think the key for him is to, and he won't get there until we see him playing games, is to get back to that. And he showed signs once Mike Furry took over. I think it was too late. You know, confidence is a thing too for that. Beamer mentioned the speed on this team. That was music to my ears. I'm a speed oversized guy in the SEC. You do have to be big enough in the SEC, don't get me wrong. And ideally, you have size and speed. But he went out of his way to say we have a fast football team at all positions. I think that's good. Kendall Briles is your offensive coordinator. You need to be fast. If you're going to do big things on special teams, you need to be fast. Clayton White certainly uses speed to his advantage on the defensive side of the ball. So that's a good note as far as alignment goes. But I'm looking forward to this spring practice. Shoot. Hopefully not. You know, the main thing is don't get hurt. No more injuries. We can't take much more of that as people that follow it and cover it. And I know the fan base can't. Significant injuries. There's going to be people banged up. He went through the list yesterday. I mean, the guys at edge that are left standing that are not limited. Because and look, I don't care if Dylan Stewart's limited. I don't care if he takes a single snap this spring. Get that back healthy. Get ready to go. That guy plays. We know what he can do. Let's rock and roll. Keep him healthy, please. But you know, guys like Caleb Herring and Anthony Addison, who are healthy, Drew Collins, who's healthy and can go full out there. Julian Walker, the freshman. You know, I think it's kind of big that Walker and Addison and Herring will all get a bunch of reps with the other guys limited. And for Deion Barnes in his first spring at Carolina. All right, you know, I got some things to say about the defensive tackles. I'll probably say them later or something. I'm a little bit more bullish on that position now that Kelby Collins is on the inside, and I need to do a little more research on the why. Get some good nuggets for you on that one, but. Should be an intriguing spring. Wish there was a spring game with so many new players. I know you can't tell anything about the whole team, but you can look at players and all that. So just for me and a talent nerd, I wish, you know, wish we could lay eyes on them. But there'll be some practice open sessions that people will get to look and see and all that good stuff. So stay tuned for all that. All right, folks. The morning show, Jamie Bradford and friends, I don't know his guest list right now, shoots up at 10 o'clock. It's wide open Wednesday on the show. So if you're not a Club Chief member, if you want to join Club Chief, it's right there on the YouTube channel. You can talk to us every day. But if you're not, this is your day to get in and pepper Mad Dog and I with questions. It's also wide open on the morning show, so you can pepper JB with questions as well. Sports Talk tonight from 6 to 8, streaming on the Chief Sports app. You can download that for free on the Apple Store or on Google Play. Stream all our shows, features, contests, all that good stuff. And again, don't forget to go to InsideTheGamecocks.com and sign up for our newsletter. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. Certainly good to be back with you today on the start of spring football practice. See you on the show. Holla.